Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Good evening and welcome to Yada Yada. It's an extraordinary day. I've been doing this now for 20 years. And over the course of 20 years, this is one of the most wonderful days thus far. Three people have worked diligently to create a site that displays the new books, all 16 of the current rewrites. They're beautifully presented, and it is today that my friend Yoel arranged for the yadaya.com and yadayawa.com URLs to link directly to them. And the site is gorgeous. The site is incredibly intuitive. It functions beautifully. Every book, every show, our entire community is all there. You will, if you go to yadaya.com, you will find a bookshelf with all of the rewritten books. But beyond that, you will find that you can click on any one of those books on that bookshelf, and it will open up for you, and you can begin reading that book. It even has the chapters down the right side, so you can move from chapter to chapter. It scales to any size window on your computer, and you can not only open the books from that bookshelf, but you can click on the books in the header, and you can see every cover. They're all organized in the proper order. Click on any book, and it will open it for you, or you can click on Amazon. And it will take you to the Kindle edition, which is all 16 books as they currently exist, for under $15. Or you can buy all of them on paperback individually, and they exist there presented in the proper order in their new look, where they all coordinate with the same white, blue, and gold, little dashes of silver and beautiful pictures. So I want to thank Jackie for her diligence. She has been unbelievably supportive, devoted to making these new editions of our books possible, making them available on Amazon, updating them, and then working with the two individuals I also want to thank, Scott and David, for their work on creating this site, which functions so beautifully, looks perfect as it relates to our overall look and feel. And remarkably, maybe it might even have been a blessing, but they did it with almost no involvement from me, which is something that I cherish, because we are so devoted now to trying to update all of the books and move forward, that to have this happen between the three of them behind the scenes is such a benefit to be able to see it develop this way. So to David, to Scott, to the queen of the Yada Yawa series, to Jackie, to the edit team that have made this possible, the fact checker, and Mike, the editors, and Molly, and in JK in particular. I am exceedingly grateful. I think Yawa is enormously pleased with us. It is one of the first times I can say in a very long time, I am genuinely proud of what we are presenting on behalf of Yahweh and for the benefit of his people. This is an extraordinarily positive moment. It's been a very long time, many of you know, since we have updated our sites. We have depended on the dedication and generosity of others who have posted our books and kept them current. One of the great dedicated, devoted individuals in this regard has been JB with his Yahweh Beirut site, but also David and taking over, Scott taking over the other sites and turning them into a supportive community. On the community, you'll see Yahweh Beirut listed prominently. You'll see the YouTube channel that has been created, and it's beautifully presented. You'll see the Bless Yahweh site, which has been updated and maintained, the Yada Yah YouTube channel, the Shamar Torah Facebook page, the Yada Yah forum, and the wonderful books that Molly has created in addition to her marvelous editing work called Yahweh for Littles, and how to present this to young children. It is beautiful. There's a link to the podcast. You can listen to the podcast on either one of three different places. They're clearly linked. So it's a beautiful site, and it follows at our new theme. And well, quite frankly, this is a wonderful day, and I'm exceedingly pleased. So thank you. Lady and gentlemen, and ladies and gentlemen, as it relates to the editing process. I measured the spines the other day of the books that we have completed in the new format and completely rewritten, and we now have 2 feet of books. That's just at the spine.
Wow.
So there is no shortage of material. And while there's a lot of material, there's some of this material that is really exceptional. I would say that yesterday and today may have been the most inspired writing that has occurred along the way. Today in particular, I was asked to integrate Yirmiyah 5 into the conclusion of the Shavua chapter. And as I did, there were times where I just had to stop what I was doing and walk away. It was too perfect. It was like God said, I'm just going to lay it out all for you here so that you have everything you need to make the point of how disgusted I am with Judaism and rabbis. And yet how much I love my people and want them to return to me. And in the midst of it, even yesterday, we came across something that when translated, is just remarkable. It is Yahweh using metaphors in such a way that it's... it not only communicates brilliantly, but resonates with his audience. And it is in this chapter that we have turned to. It's towards the end of that chapter. The chapter is a scant, 130 pages as it currently sits. And we're going to pick up the story on page 21 of that chapter. I had wanted Kirk to return to the beginning of the chapter. Mm-hmm. Because after the show last week, I completely rewrote the chapter.
I know.
And you might wonder, why would I do that? You know, I thought it was a pretty decent show last week. I thought the material we covered was reasonably presented. And I went back and wrote it all, rewrote it all. And the reason was by doing the show and talking about it and seeing those words, just sharing them, I realized how much I had missed. And more importantly, I realized that I was giving way too much credit to Shimon Kefesh and the presentation in Acts. As if, you know, we were back dealing with the first pass through questioning Paul, where I tried to somehow make sense of it all and then finally realized, oh, my God, this is filth. What am I doing here? I'm disgusted. I need to go back. This is not something I should be giving any credence to. And rewrote it. And then, as you know, rewrote it again. And most recently, Questioning Paul has turned into a 4-volume set, and still,
and sure.
if I were to rewrite it next week, it would probably be an 8-volume set.
Jackie says she's going to be out of town.
Yeah. In fact, this chapter that we're reading right now is going to become the final chapter of volume 4 of Questioning Paul. It's going to appear both in the Shabua chapter, which is the third of the Shabua chapters of volume 5, Moed, of Yada Yahweh, but also in Questioning Paul, because it is an expose on what's wrong with the Christian New Testament. This
Everything.
Absolutely and unequivocally destroys its credibility, and it destroys its credibility actually in its heart. You know, it's one thing to do as we have done, to prove that Paul was the plague of death, that he was the father of lies, that he was the son of evil. Yahweh uses those terms. And we've compared Paul's writings to Yahweh's testimony and proven that Paul was a fraud. And that eliminates 14 books of the Christian New Testament. But there's so much more. We've also shown that Paul deliberately recruited Mark to create a gospel that would support Paul's mantra. We know that Luke was Paul's attaché, his propagandist, his publicist, perhaps more. And that's the book of Luke and the book of Acts. And we know that Matthew is very little more than someone plagiarizing Mark and Luke. But when you expose and condemn the opening of Acts, which is citations allegedly from Shimon Kefesh, the most credible of the disciples, and you show that they cannot be true, that they're absolutely, unequivocally wrong. Not just in subtle ways, but in absolute ways. That in so doing, you've robbed Christianity of everything. If Luke didn't tell the truth, and he didn't, if Luke had an agenda which was to support Paul's anti-Semitism and replacement theology, which it is, then you can't trust what he wrote on the formation of the religion. The book of Acts, without the book of Acts, Christianity has no foundation. And yet it's not credible. Book of Luke now has no credibility, which means the book of Matthew has no credibility. I mean, Mark has no credibility. And we already know Paul has no credibility. The whole thing vanishes. There's nothing left.
No.
So this is an extremely important review that we are undertaking it. And what I found as I pursued it is that while it initially destroys the credibility of Christianity, which is exceedingly important for the chosen people, because if you can prove emphatically Christianity's anti-Semitism and their persecution of Jews was all based on lies by the original authors of the Christian scriptures, then Christians can be, or Jews can be much more aggressive in pushing back and defending themselves. And Christians are left exposed, naked, and without excuse. But that's not how this story ends. Because while Yahweh is exceedingly angry at Christianity and Islam for the hell they have perpetrated on his people, his animosity towards Christianity and Islam, even socialist humanism, pales in comparison for his hatred of Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find as we push through this material that Yahweh's testimony assails Judaism, and it differentiates Judaism from being Jewish. God still wants to reconcile his relationship with his people. He still loves his people. He intends to protect his people. But he's not just protecting them from Goyim. He's protecting them from the rabbis. I think we have an open mic. Perhaps that's you, JB. If you are, if it is, you're welcome. Looking forward to hearing from you. But wow, that was a lot of feedback. All right, we're going to pick up just a little bit. Yeah, a little bit from where we were. I have sent you copies of this chapter, JB. It's going to appear for those who are interested and for those who want to read the rewrite of the first 21 pages of it. You can do so probably within the week at the fourth volume of Questioning Paul, which will be added to the new website and will be added to the book on Questioning Paul. It'll be a while before it's added to the fifth volume of Moed, because I'm just on the, for I just finished the first three chapters, so which will be 9 or 10 chapters of that volume. We're going to pick up where we left off a little before. It says, Yisraelite men, listen to these words. Iusu, Nazarene, is a man who publicly demonstrated to you that he is from Theos, using supernatural powers and ability to perform extraordinary miracles with prophetic significance. These are signs which Theos performed through him in your midst, as you know. This was not spoken by Shimon, but it was written by Luke. Shimon would have known that there was no reason at this point in time to call his people Yisraelites, because Yisrael had been hauled into captivity about 700 years earlier. There were Yehudim there, and he would have known that. He would have also known that there was no Nazareth at the time. The concept of Nazareth and Jesus of Nazareth was conceived by Constantine's mommy and was first added to these writings by Eusebius, who was Constantine's publicist and chief promoter. The very fact that this says that these are the words, or listen to the words, and speaks of Iusu the Nazarene, proves that this is a fraud. The earliest that there was a community named Nazareth was in the 2nd century CE. While there was a town co-located in what became Nazareth, it was not called Nazareth in the 1st century, and in fact was uninhabited in the 1st century. If Yosha used supernatural powers and ability to perform extraordinary miracles at prophetic significance and performed them in your midst, and the audience was aware of them, these words would have been a waste of time. Be no reason to speak them. You know, it's like saying that you stood there and you watched the volcano at Pompeii explode, and then you have some idiot sitting on the street corner in Pompeii is that, you know, there was an explosion of Vesuvius, as you know. Okay, Sherlock, I get it.
How people talk in bad movies when you need exposition explained.
Yeah, it's when somebody says, as you know, it means that they don't know.
They don't know, yeah.
They don't know. So this did not happen. It was not said. And it's not the purpose of the Pesach El, the Passover lamb, to perform miracles. The purpose of the Pesach El, to nourish the people and to what it does. He was appointed to be prearranged and prophetic based on the plan and purpose of Theos. Well, yes, the Passover lamb was, but guess what one thing Luke's writings don't say about him?
Anything he wrote, he didn't write anything.
Well, no. He didn't mention that he was the Passover lamb. The only thing that's important about Yosha, he was the Passover lamb.
Yes.
The one thing they never say about him is that he was the Passover lamb.
He was the Passover lamb.
And by the way, just as a suggestion here for those who want to keep it real, there is a 0% possibility that Shimon, the disciple, would have referred to Yahusha as Aizu. And yet that's what appears. He was betrayed and given over to the hand of the Torahless, who chose to take control of him and affix him. Well, with the exception of Yosha, everyone was Torahless. The Jews were into their Talmud, and these Christians were into their New Testament. It hadn't been written at this point, of course, but there was nobody who was Torahless, right, that was Torah observant. Nobody. If he had been Torah observant, you would have said, wasn't it marvelous, the witness that we had of the fulfillment of Pesach? We're the luckiest men alive. We actually, at year 4,000 Yah, got to observe Yahweh honoring his promise to Abraham to provide the Passover lamb. And we witnessed it in our lifetimes. And then, as we know, based upon the writings of Dod and his prophecies, he went to Sheol to remove the fungus of sin from us so that we could be perfected. And then Yahweh's soul and the set-apart spirit were reunited on Bukhurim as an entirely new being, one that was a harbinger of what we should expect as we are born anew from above spiritually as a result of Bukhurim firstborn children, such that seven sevens later, in complete consistency with the Torah instructions, the set-apart spirit came upon us, enriching us, empowering us, enlightening us. And we, ladies and gentlemen, are the most fortunate men and women in the world to have seen this, to have benefited from this. If he had said that, this would have had merit. It would have showed that he understood what took place, but that's not what he said. He said instead that he was betrayed. No, he wasn't. Luke wants to present the Jews as the ones who betrayed God. But how could he have been betrayed if, in fact, this was his destiny?
if he came and it was prearranged for him to serve as the Passover lamb, then how is it possible that God could have been betrayed?
Impossible.
I ask it. It's just not possible. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that it was all fulfilled in accordance with the plan and then say, oh, by the way, he was betrayed. They wrote betrayed, even though it contradicted their own thesis, because if they do not disparage Jews, they have no religion. They have to present the notion that God became anti-Semitic, that God turned on his people, and as a result of that, decided, without any notice, without a single prophecy affirming it, that he was going to become unreliable, break all of his promises to a people, and give them to somebody else because he was betrayed. The basis of Christianity, and yet it's nonsense. Then they talk about affixing him, which most Bibles translate as crucifixion. Do you have any idea how meaningless crucifixion is? I don't want to diminish the pain. The Romans were savages. The Romans, who became the Roman Catholics, the worst of humankind. Hard to imagine people developing more excruciating torture devices. Well, that's probably not fair, because go into a Roman Catholic museum that shows their implements during the Inquisition, and you'll find out that they were good Romans. They were disgusting people. That's what's so amazing here, is that the most disgusting people in human history painted the Jews as disgusting. And they were supposed to forgive all of the Roman and Roman Catholic perversions because, well, we're supposed to believe that the Jews are the ones that are really disgusting. Absurd. But crucifixion is meaningless. The cross is meaningless. It's a stupid icon. It's not even shaped the way the original object looked, and the original object is absolutely, totally meaningless. The symbol of Christianity is nothing but an idol. What mattered is that he was the Passover lamb, period. And there is no mention of Passover and the dead God in a stick. And if Yahweh provided his soul so that he could serve as the Passover lamb, what's the single worst thing that you could possibly do? Rub it in his face, show him nailed to that stupid Roman torture device.
Mm-hmm.
Dead. What could you do that would be more infuriating, more disrespectful, more hurtful than that? Does anybody with the Passover lamb say, I tell you what, I got an idea. We're going to make this lamb squeal then. What we're going to do here is we're not going to kill this lamb mercifully. No, we're going to put the lamb on public display. We're going to flail it alive. We're going to beat it senseless. And then we're going to take its little hooves and nail them to a stick. And then to celebrate the sacrifice of this Passover lamb, we're going to make this lamb nailed to that stick our idol, our symbol. That ought to really fix them. Oh, and then, by the way, after the lamb's done all that, we're going to negate its sacrifice by not capitalizing on it at all. No, all we're going to do is focus on the ghoulish spectacle. And then worse, after we torture the damn lamb, we're going to have Twinkle Toes come back to life. How about them apples? And then we're going to make a religion out of it. You know, if you're a Christian and you believe that nonsense, shame on you. You're an idiot. Oh, by the way, you know, I have said a lot of aggressive blunt, non-politically correct things about religions. And so I'm off concluding the Shavua chapter, final page of the Shavua chapter. And God, bless his heart, tees it up. I have never read material this aggressive against Judaism and rabbis. You think that I'm harsh on them. Wait till you hear what God has to say about
it. Wow.
So if you don't like me condemning rabbis and Judaism on behalf of Jews, then you're not going to like what Yahweh has to say very much. Theos restored him to life and raised him. We got an entirely new interpretation of the Passover lamb. Nope, the Passover lamb doesn't nourish the family. Nope, the Passover lamb is no longer Yahweh sacrificing himself for our benefit. Nope, the Passover lamb saves himself. Why do we kill him then? What's the purpose in killing him if he's going to come back to life? What's the purpose of Yahweh establishing Passover if we're going to come up with our own little version? Releasing and dismissing him from the suffering and pain of death because it was not possible for him to exist, held and influenced by those things. Are you playing everybody for a fool, Luke? You want to make the symbol of your religion your God dying on a damn stick. And then after him being whipped to a pulp by the Romans and nailed to the most excruciating torment man had ever invented, you're going to say, it wasn't possible for him to suffer those pain. Nope, that couldn't have suffered that pain. Wasn't possible. And then you say that he died for your sins. He said, no, he couldn't die. You need a fact checker. I mean, I've got one, Mike. Is Mike's a great fact checker. I might recommend. Yeah, Mike, so...
Mike won't work for that.
Blunt, by the way, says, that's not true. If I misstate something, he says, nope, that's not true. I'd recommend a fact checker for these bozos. All right, so the apostles alleged Shavuah was advanced by way of a second Tanakh citation, this one from the 16th Mizmor Psalm. But so as to better understand why he is credited with selecting it, let's begin our examination by studying the entire song from which the excerpt was taken. Shimon would not have cited it in a vacuum, so we should not approach it out of context either. And the fact of the matter is, I really like Dodd and enjoy his psalms, so it was an opportunity to put some sanity in the mix of this insanity. A poem concerning Dodd. Mit Tom. A written piece of literature inscribed by staining the parchment upon which it is indelibly conveyed about the beloved La Dodd. Watch closely over me and be concerned about me. Shamar, Ani, keep a caring focus on me. Tend to and be observant regarding me, God. Because in you I confide and trust. So I am kept safe and comforted. Dodd was in a unique position, one to a far lesser degree we find ourselves in. If you were about the business of Yahweh, he has an obligation, a commitment, a reason, a genuine desire to keep tabs on us, to focus on us, to tend to us, to send out his malach to protect us. And there's a reason for that. Yeah, there's a reason for that. There are so few of us. willing to do this. That the last thing God's going to allow is for us to be wiped out. You know, I had a ticket on an airplane as the seventh, the eighth soul that would have been on that airplane. It was the first act of aviation terrorism. I got malaria and I was kept off of that airplane. The 77 souls that were on it all died. I once was flying my Pilatus into Reagan National, and two Airbuses, big, large airplanes, slow and dirty with their flaps up, prepared for landing, crossed over me. There's three runways at Reagan National. The wing vortex of those airliners turned me upside down, 1,000 feet over the Pentagon, in an airplane that is incapable of recovering from either a roll or a stall. Yet I'm here talking to you, aren't I?
Mm-hmm.
I have done something that no one has ever survived. I wrote a comprehensive book exposing and condemning Muhammad, Allah, Islam, and the Quran. And I did so under my own name. And yet here I am. Yahweh takes care of those who speak on his behalf. Dode knew it. He didn't say this for himself. He already knew it. He wrote it for us. And the smartest thing we can do with anything we find written in the Torah is apply it to ourselves. When I read something like this, I say, yeah, thank you. It resonates with me. You're doing it for me. Okay, it may be a billionth of a billionth of a billionth times less. Doesn't change the fact. Meaningful for Yahweh, meaningful for me. Okay, so Dode is the ultimate. The fact that we're less important doesn't diminish the fact that we're exceedingly important. And, you know, this is not a competition. You know, Dode's not competing with us to stay numero uno. He's sharing everything he knows so that we can be like him.
Wow.
The contrast is between trust, of course, and faith. Trust is the result of knowing, while faith is its poor substitute. Dode was the exemplar of knowing. He is God's chosen one. Paul, as an advocate of faith, became the plague of death. My hope is that Shimon may have cited Dode's psalm to make this very point, although it's not to be so. Dode knew where he stood and with whom he stood. I say to approach Yahweh, you are my foundation and my support. I have nothing to offer which is worthwhile or useful apart from you. In all of human history, this was the man with the best resume. You know, we always want things we can add to our resume. This is the best resume in the history of mankind. Mm-hmm. He's King of Kings. Yahweh's chosen one. Yahweh's firstborn, Son of God.
Mashiach.
Three times anointed, anointed mm-hmm. Mashiach. He is the branch, the chosen one. He is everything that's important to God. He is the exemplar of the covenant. He is the heir that will have a disproportionate share of what God is offering. When he returns with Yahweh, Yahweh says he will be as God. Which is, by the way, what Son of God means, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This is the man that defended Israel, never lost a battle. This is God's shepherd of his people. That guy's got the greatest resume in the history of mankind. He was a poet. He was a rock star singer. He wrote his own material and then sang it. He was a brilliant writer, probably the most brilliant orator and author in all of human history. He left us the legacy of the Psalms and the Proverbs. What a life. At 8 years old, he takes one stone and slays the biggest enemy of his people. I don't know what you were doing at eight, but it's for darn sure. Well, measure up. I have now written, well, the ones that count, 16 books. It'll certainly be 25 on Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And yet, Dode was the prophet of prophets. Yeah, it's Dode's prolific material that we're sharing. Yeah. This is the most extraordinary man who ever lived. The man that God values a relationship more than anyone else, and he says, I've got nothing to offer
nothing
other than what Yahweh has provided. Okay? So, put that in perspective. Yeah, I'm really proud of this new website. I'm really proud of these new books. I am thrilled with the content and the presentation of that content. And I think we've done a marvelous job, and I'm so proud of the team for doing this, accomplishing it. And yet we're nothing by comparison. And all we've really done is capitalize on what Yahweh conveyed through his prophets and inspired us to understand through his Spirit. And yet still, it's extraordinary. I find it particularly reassuring that Dode found pleasure in knowing that we would capitalize on what he had written to lead others to the same place. And one of the things that makes Dode so great, he writes, regarding the set-apart, he's not writing about the set-apart spirit. He's writing about the set-apart. Regarding the set-apart, who are they? Us.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And by the way, if you answered it first person singular, me, you're right. Me. Regarding the set-apart. Me. Us in the land who show the way to the relationship. They are also awesome. And in them is all of my satisfaction and enjoyment. You know, JB, I hope that you're still with us. I know you got your mic turned off. But this, when I translated this, the first thing I thought of was our conversation. That you were absolutely certain that you were going to do what I couldn't do. And I was so excited for you being able to do it. You were going to translate and just present your translations. You aren't going to clutter them all up by this commentary stuff.
Yeah, that didn't last long.
No. Why? Because you want other people to benefit from what you're learning. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason you want the commentary. You want to share it. You want other people to benefit. You're not keeping it for yourself would be selfish. You want to share it. You want other people to benefit from it. Dode is saying, my greatest satisfaction in life. Not only have others benefited from this, but that they're awesome. Dode thinks we're awesome. Isn't that cool? But that is Dode has demonstrated and is stating here exactly what you found out, JB, and what I learned very on. I must have had 100,000, maybe not 100,000, but 100 or maybe it's 1,000 people over time. I've been doing this a long time, 20 years now, who have written and said, you know, do you have just a book of the translations that you've done as opposed to, you know, intermixed with all this commentary? I said, no. Well, could you prepare one? I think people would enjoy it.
No.
You know, if you want a book of just translation, go translate it. You know, I wouldn't discourage you. Go do it. Nothing wrong with that. You can have one. That's not the way Yahweh's revelation works.
You know, what did I call Yada Yahweh? The byline. The conversation with God.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is he conveys his message. We come to understand it. We come to appreciate it. We come to incorporate it. We come to accept it. It resonates within us. It communicates to us. And then we want to share what we have learned. And sometimes we just share the way that I did first thing today. I was so amazed, so grateful for what Yahweh had conveyed through his prophet. That, in fact, I wrote Jackie. I said, I'm going to send you the chapter. I may not get back to it today. I need to walk away. It's this was too powerful. Too perfect, actually. I didn't even know what to write. It's just too perfect. But that's the way that Yahweh's testimony resonates within me. It is why when we did this program last week and we were talking about these things, I learned so much. I had to go back and rewrite it all. It's a good thing, not a bad thing. God is having a conversation with us. Now, be fair. My conversations with God are probably similar to yours, JB, and yours, Kirk. It's about 99.9% listening and about 0.1% responding. Yeah, if that doesn't work for you, you're not going to like it. But you can be an active listener. In other words,
yes.
You can make connections. You can jump all over the place. You can ask questions.
What about?
Right, what about? So you can be a really active listener, and it's going to be an enriched experience for you. But God's got a lot to say. And the better we do listening, the more we're going to get out of this conversation. And, you know, ultimately, we're going to be in Shamayim. We're going to be seven-dimensional creatures. We're going to be able to communicate directly with God. And even then, even as he empowers us, enriches us, enlightens us, makes us infinitely more capable than we are now, I still imagine that God's going to want to hear what we have to say and how we respond to the things that he has created. But even then, I mean, there's going to be a difference. He's really smart. He's funny. He's entertaining. I still think that we're going to be odd. Not afraid, but odd. So, Dode is actually saying that God's covenant family are Yasam. In contrast to those who would join him in their approach to Yahweh, Dode realized that most people would be led astray, chasing after gods made by men. And so he writes, the sorrows and suffering of those who are impetuous and who chase after another will be great, as they will be numerous and influential. Their drink offerings of blood I will never pour out or offer. And I will not I will not advance or promote their names on my lips. I'm going to have pour out on the mind here for a while. It is because of what Yahweh wrote in Yoel, and also what he conveyed through Yirmiyah. But as it turns to this, it's one in a million that accept the terms and conditions of the covenant. Ultimately, be a higher percentage of the remnant of his people. But up to this point, in fact, for a lot of time, there was none in a million. And right now, there's about one in a million. And so most people, incredibly, choose not God. They choose a God made by men. They chose a God that is so contradictory and hypocritical that he's meaningless. He's no better than they are. And so the numbers of people that are following false gods, look, there's what, 1.6 billion Muslims. There are 2.5 to 3 billion Christians, as I like to call them.
Christians.
There are, what, 1.5 billion socialist, secular, humanist, progressives that are so caught up in their underwear they have to have cancel culture. Because facts don't serve their agenda. We're going to make up our own.
That's right.
Yeah, the latest conspiracy, cancel culture. So Dota is saying that there are going to be a lot of unhappy people out there. As for the drink offerings of blood, I say, well, who is out there drinking blood? Roman Catholics.
Well, Catholics, of course.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. And Orthodox Christians, which make up about three-quarters of the total, the most popular religion in the world. That's the claim of Roman Catholics during their Eucharist, that they turn the grape juice into the blood of their Jesus Christ. He says, I'm never going to involve in that. I'm not drinking blood. And I will not advance or promote the names on my lips. Jesus Christ, name of a false god. He's as false as Dionysus and Odysseus. He's as false as Hashem and Adonai. He's as false as Allah. Dota is not going to do that. Why? Because he has a personal relationship with Yahweh. Yahweh's gift is my decision, my fate, my assigned share and my reward, as well as my cup and receptacle. You uphold my lot and my destiny. That's Mizmor, Psalm 16:5. It's where we ended our program last week. Dode views God as his gift, that having chosen God, determined his fate and afforded him his reward. My suggestion would be, do the same. The measuring lines have been aligned for me in highly acceptable and delightful ways. Yes, indeed. We're all going to get, receive an inheritance beyond our capacity to even comprehend, because we are three-dimensional constructs, and we're going to be enriched and empowered into the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh dimension, with each iteration upward being an infinite increase in capability, enlightenment, and enrichment. And so we're going to inherit literally more than we could possibly imagine by infinity to the fourth power. And yet, we're going to be paupers compared to Dode. Dode's the firstborn. He gets the lion's share, literally the lion's share. Dode is the king. It's his kingdom. Now, he's very, very generous. So we're not going to be wanting. And by the way, if you knew the responsibility that lion has been given, and for the additional share he's going to be given, it's the worst deal in the history of deals. I wouldn't take it.
I'll let him have that.
You can just let him have it. We've all had responsibility. The less responsibility I have in eternity, the happier I'm going to be. I love work. I'm going to want to be engaged. I want to do stuff. I want to make y'all proud. But that level of responsibility? No. No, people are, even the best of us are sometimes tough to manage. I'm delighted that he has accepted this responsibility, and I'm delighted that Yahweh has given him a very generous inheritance, and he deserves it. Surely I have been offered an enjoyable and pleasing, especially brilliant inheritance. God says of him, when he returns, he's going to be as brilliant as the sun,
Wow. Let's call that an understatement. Okay.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
Yep. But by the way, for him to say enjoyable and pleasing, you know his first job? His first job is to pile up corpses.
Oh, yeah. Got a clean house.
But beyond count. Yeah, he's got,
yeah.
He has got to rid the world of the stench of religion. And so, but he's saying, hey, that's enjoyable. Why would it be enjoyable? Defending your family's pleasing. I will commend the excellence of Yahweh, who, to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, determines the plan and provides me with counsel and purpose, even during the night, even during the darkest hours. So, Dode recognized that he was in this position because of Yahweh, and he was grateful. And he wanted to share Yahweh's plan and counsel because Yahweh had shared it with him. Then my visceral reaction to being Yah's implement provides me with disciplined teaching, proper instruction, and correction. I am have become accustomed now, no matter how uncomfortable it has become, to see Yahweh prophetically speaking about what we're doing. No matter how uncomfortable I become with it, the most selfish thing in the world would be to ignore it. Yahweh conveyed his involvement with his Nish banner, these books, and his work through his Choder and his Nakri, because he wants his people to listen. He wants them to come home. And so if he is going to say it over and over again in so many different ways, it's because he wants his people to pay attention to what we're sharing. And yet, we're nothing but implements. We're not, compared to the actual prophets and compared to the one who inspired the prophets, We're like a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Leah took me outside the other day and said, I want to show you something. And he says, this is a Choder. It's this secondary stalk of a tree. It's a beautiful fruit tree. And right beside the actual trunk of the tree, coming up from the rootstock itself, was this beautiful sucker. We use the term sucker, and sucker sounds like a pejorative, but it's not. It's new growth, upright, productive, from the same rootstock. It's an implement. I'd like to say an insignificant implement. It's not insignificant to God.
No,
not insignificant to his people.
No.
But we are implements. Dode, the most magnificent human who ever lived, and by the way, Dode was beautiful, and Yahweh is going to use his DNA to create a Dode version 2 that is going to be unbelievably beautiful. So I will commend the excellence of Yahweh, who, to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, determines the plan and provides me with counsel, even during the darkest hours. Then my visceral reaction to being Yah's implement provides me with disciplined teaching, proper instruction, and correction. I think when we view ourselves as an implement, that's a proper and good thing.
Okay.
And now we know why Yahweh chose Dode. Called him his son, anointed him Messiah, inspired him as a prophet, anointed him shepherd and king, enabled him with his spirit, all for our benefit. Yah was offering his children the ultimate reward, eternal life in his presence. It is a brilliant inheritance, and for it, we should be, as Dode was, appreciative. willing to proclaim the excellence of Yahweh, extolling the resulting relationship. The point of all of this is that we can live like Dode. We can think like Dode. We can experience what Dode enjoyed when we study his words and apply them to our lives. We should all be singing along, at least up to the point of screaming. By robbing the world of everything Dode contributed to our lives to legitimize the Dionysian caricature of Jesus Christ, Paul and Pals transformed the Passover lamb into an anti-Semitic monster.
Isn't that amazing?
To confront this, Dode leveled a broadside against the Gnostic nature of Pauline Christianity. The argument that Shaul Paul used to rob Yahweh, his Torah, his covenant, his people, and his Mashiach of their relevance was to opine that they were flesh, which from the Gnostic perspective was corruptible and evil. Well, this would have been an exceedingly odd place for Shimon to have begun his citation of the Mizmor. It is, nonetheless, the place where Luke jumped toward. By doing so, rather than realizing that the psalm is about Dode, describing his relationship with Yahweh, I think God made that point really clear. The reader of Acts is fooled into believing that Dode was speaking prophetically of the Christian Jesus Christ, and then referring to him as the Lord. Now, in this context, that is absolutely ludicrous. But nonetheless, that's what appears in the Christian knit. Here's Acts 2:25 and 2:26. For David speaketh concerning him. Bullcrap. For David speaketh concerning him. The context, of course, would make him Jesus. I foresaw the Lord always before my face, for he is on my right hand, that I should not be moved. Therefore, did my heart rejoice, and my tongue was glad. Moreover, also my flesh shall rest in hope, because I foresaw the Lord. Or if you prefer the more literal rendering for David, the placeholder in the Greek New Testament, for David, said of him, I foresee the placeholder for Kyrios in front of me, always on my behalf, because from his right hand I will not be shaken or swayed. Therefore my heart rejoices, and my tongue delights, that also my flesh will abide and endure as a result of confidence and trusting expectations. So, by the way, later they're going to say, not only was Dode dead, but his flesh rotted away in his grave. But right here they're saying that Dode says his flesh will never decay. Mike. They needed a fact checker. Oh, well, this was a horribly misconstrued paraphrase of Psalm 16:8-9, which was wrongly attributed, if you recall, in Acts 2:22-24, Shimon was supposedly telling the Jews all about the miraculous nature of Jesus. So by saying that David spoke concerning him, Dode's assessment of his relationship with Yahweh was wrongly projected upon Jesus. This mistake, either by Shimon or Luke, may have been due in part to not being aware that it was Yahweh's name which had been replaced with Adonai, the Lord, in the Septuagint, not Yahusha's. However, since Dode's psalms were all written about Yahweh and never mentioned Yahusha by name or by title, this misrepresentation could not have been by accident. It was premeditated. In his mizmor, Dode would continue to refer to God by his one and only name. I intensely desire to firmly place Yahweh before me. Wait a minute. Didn't we just read in the Christian Net that it was the Lord, and the Lord was supposed to be Jesus, that Dode was speaking of Jesus? And this actually reads, I intensely desire to firmly place Yahweh before me. Well, that makes Luke a liar.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes Luke a liar. It means you can't trust the book of Acts. You can't trust the book of Luke. That's what that means. Pure and simple. I intensely desire to firmly place Yahweh before me, always and continuously. Indeed, as a result of me being right, I shall neither be shaken nor fall into an unfavorable or unresolvable circumstance. Therefore, my attitude and thinking are joyous. What's more, the manifestation of power, which is abundant and valued within my persona, expresses his joy over this enormously favorable an uplifting situation and outcome. In addition, my physical body and my proclamation regarding the flesh lives and abides with confidence. Well, that's a far cry from that ridiculous presentation of the Christian New Testament. But it's not just that they misquote it. If they took something where it was absolutely obvious that Dode was talking about his relationship with Yahweh and named Yahweh and then wrote that David was speaking of their Lord, Jesus Christ. Absolute lie. This is powerful. This is Dode explaining his relationship with God. This is Dode saying, I intensely desire to firmly place Yahweh before me, always and continuously. Indeed, as a result of me being right, I shall neither be shaken nor fall into an unfavorable or unresolvable circumstance, ever. Therefore, my attitude and thinking are joyous. What's more, the manifestation of power which is abundant and valued within my persona expresses his joy, God's joy, over this enormously favorable and uplifting situation and outcome. In addition, my physical body and my proclamation regarding the flesh, Bashar, lives and abides with confidence. So much for him being dead and buried. But herein is how the Christian New Testament deceives. By removing citations from their proper context, misquoting and misapplying them, the likes of Luke and Paul have tricked readers into believing things about Jesus, which applied to David. Robbing David to pay tribute to Jesus is among the most egregious and deadly crimes ever committed by religious men. And you might wonder why that is so. Because Dode is a prophet, because Dode is our shepherd, because Dode is the Messiah, because Dode is the returning king, because Dode is the Son of God. And any time we deprive the most important father in the universe of what he has promised to his son, and we besmirch the son, rob that son, to give those promises to someone else, we've done something incredibly offensive and counterproductive. Along these lines, the statement, "I foresaw the Lord always before my face," will be extrapolated to convey something astonishingly sinister by the time we reach Acts 2:35. The bad boys of Christendom were just getting warmed up. Also telling, Paul claimed that by contrast, his faith was spiritual and thus better. He slathered Abraham and Dode in his errant perceptions to make his point. Unfortunately for Paul and those who foolishly believed that he spoke for God, the flesh is not evil. God blessed it. He created it. Should Dode be correct regarding the flesh, and he was clearly inspired by Yah, then Paul, as his publicist, and his publicist, I should say, Luke, were not only wrong, they could not have been inspired by God. As is the case with everything in this debate, trust and reliance, indeed, confidence is a product of knowing and understanding insight such as this. While faith bridges the gap when a believer is either ignorant or irrational. The reason Yahweh inspired Dode to share this with us is so that we can replace one with the other and, like his prophet, be right. Should you hold the belief that this poem has not been about commending Yahweh and condemning Shaul Paul and the religion he and his devotees fathered, consider this especially in light of Paul saying, "Now when David had served God's purpose, in his own generation he fell asleep, and he was buried with his ancestors, and his body decayed." Acts 13:36. Mike, fact check please on aisle 13. Even their bogus citation of the psalm says, "Nope, my body's not going to decay." God, folks, methinks this proves that the principal authors of the Christian New Testaments needed a fact checker. By way of contrast, Dode wrote, "You will not abandon your association with my soul with regard to Shaul, never allowing your set-apart one to see corruption or degradation." Well, that puts Pauline Christians in a hell of a fix, because Shaul became Paul. And here is an inspired statement from Yahweh's son that says, "You will not abandon your association with my soul with regard to Shaul, who wants me dead, buried, and rotten, never allowing your set-apart one," that's the one of Dode's titles, "to see corruption and degradation." What's particularly illuminating about this statement is that Shaul misquoted it as divinely inspired, thereby acknowledging that it was true. And yet by misappropriating it for Jesus, Paul undeniably proved that he should not be trusted. It's simple logic, folks. Paul went on to say, "So it is also stated elsewhere, you will not let your Holy One see decay." That's this one, except it doesn't say Holy One. And he is speaking of Dode. Jesus. Wow. Never lose sight of the realization that Shaul and Sheol are synonymous for a reason. One leads to the other. Luke, aware of Paul's twisted betrayal of Psalm 16, did his mentor proud and had Peter endorse the same myth. Acts 2:27, "And because thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption." Or more literally, "Because my soul will not be utterly forsaken and totally abandoned in Hades, neither will your set apart and dedicated one be allowed to see decay and decomposition, which these Nimrods are applying to their Jesus. But it doesn't say Jesus. This is Dode writing about himself. I mean, if the facts are inconsistent with your theory, abandon your theory and find a theory that is consistent with the facts. Don't just continue to pile up a bunch of inconsistent facts that disprove your theory and say, well, I've just marshaled 1,000 facts that all prove my theory is wrong, which means that it must be right. Think it through. That it doesn't apply to you. You think, just think for a moment, you're God. Your name is Yahweh. You create the universe. You author the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. You fulfill the 7 Moed Mikre. You establish the covenant. You free your people from Mitzrayim. You've done all of this. You establish the nation for them. You have so many fulfilled prophecies, they're beyond count. And you can't tell the difference between Dode, your number one guy's name, and the name that you used to fulfill Passover? How many letters do Yahweh and, excuse me, Dode and Yosha have in common? Or Dode and Jesus? Hey, do you think that God is so stupid that he inspired Dode to say this of himself when he really means to say it of himself? I mean, how dumb is the Christian God? I mean, I'm not great with names. Some people walk up, they introduce themselves, say, hey, that's great. And 5 minutes later, I'm wondering, who was he say his name was? But, you know, I'm just your average idiot. You know, so I'm a seasoned citizen sitting out here in a Virgin Island. We're talking about God. He knows the difference between Dode and Yosha. Dode's name he mentions in his revelation 1,100 plus times. Yosha's, as it relates to the Yosha as the Passover lamb, never mentions once. Not once. If the Passover lamb is supposed to be worshipped as God, if he's the basis of a new religion, why wouldn't God say something about him? Why did God spend so much time telling us about Dode if Dode doesn't matter and it's really the Passover lamb? If God wanted us to pay attention to Iesu Christu, don't you think he could find somebody better to tell us that story than Tweedledee-Tweedledum?
Yes.
The inference, of course, that Luke, Tweedledee, and Paul, Tweedledum, were making at Shimon's and Dode's expense was that David's body rotted in the grave while Jesus did not suffer that indignity. However, the prophecy was addressing Dode's soul, not Yosha's body.
Yeah.
It says, my soul. Who's the author? Dode?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't speak about a body.
No, I went back and looked.
The prophecy was addressing Dode's soul. Therefore, the authors of the Christian New Testament deliberately lied to promote their religion. Now, for those that say, well, you're being too harsh on Christianity, that's not politically correct. That's just mean, and Jesus wouldn't want you to be mean. Are you an idiot? Over 2 billion people have been hoodwinked, their souls stolen from them based upon these lies. It's like saying that you don't think we should condemn Hitler because he started a war that robbed 50 million people of their souls. That's you're besmirching Nazism. That's just not fair. You're not being multicultural. No, this is a religion that was conceived as a deliberate lie that has robbed billions upon billions of people of their souls and has harassed and persecuted God's people and corrupted Yahweh's message. Damn right. I'm upset. As should everyone be. This is the debate between relationship and religion, between right and wrong, between Dode and Shaul, between the Torah and the New Testament, between the covenant and Christianity. God is on Dode's side, which is why Lucas and Shaul misquoted this statement and twisted it to claim otherwise. Forewarned is forearmed. Shaul's way leads to death and destruction, while Dode's leads to renewed life. It is the reason this Mizmor was written. Let us never forget. You have made known to me, Yada Ani, the way to life. It's beautiful. You have made known to me the way of life. And he shared it with us. Or you could believe the man Yahweh calls the plague of death. Yada Ani, or Rock Che. You have made known to me. You are my source of understanding. You reveal information and instruction to me. You enable me to be aware and perceptive, such that I am acquainted with, revealed, and experienced the way, the life, living a bountiful, blessed, favorable, and prosperous existence, nourished, restored, and renewed. There is total satisfaction and contentment in the abundant, transcendent joy associated with your presence. The pleasure of being accepted by being right with you is glorious and forevermore. Mizmor, lyric to be sung, 1611. So what do you add to that? Yes, of course. Capitalize upon it. Cherish it. Share it. Benefit from it. The only reason this Mizmor was written. Dode already knew it. He wrote it to share it with us. This, which was written by Dode and of Dode, is to be compared with the projection unto Jesus. Thou hast made known to me the ways of life. Thou shalt make me full of joy with thy countenance. To accept Yah is to be right. To know Yah is to live with him. To be with Yahweh is to be joyous, satisfied, and content. We would have to search long and hard to find a more fitting proclamation to refute the likes of Paul and Luke. We could read this 1,000 times, never grow weary of it, or what it reveals. And yet, by contrast, there is the swamp of grotesque corruptions known as the Christian New Testament. It is filled with deliberately convoluted statements like these written by Luke. And yet, it is by a factor of a million to one more popular than Yahweh's prophets.
That's amazing.
One of two things, Kirk, is JB is true.
Mm-hmm.
Shimon agreed with Shaul and wrongly attributed something Dode wrote about himself and his relationship with Yahweh and projected it onto Iusu, or Luke, Paul's apologist and propagandist, put these words in Peter's mouth to support his mentor. And if you are wondering who to blame for this deliberate and debilitating deception, you may want to consider who wrote it. Our excursion into the bowels of the Christian New Testament has thus far provided very little to affirm the Torah's presentation of Shavuot. And yet, by considering how its authors convoluted Yahweh's intent by misquoting him, we have learned a great deal about the religion Paul perpetrated to rob Jews of their rights and responsibilities, beginning with doubt. This note, if you are interested in knowing or sharing the way to life, consider reading and reciting Dodes Mizmor rather than anything scribbled in the Christian New Testament. Therein you will become right, be accepted, and find satisfaction. You'll be enveloped in Yahweh's glory forevermore. It's a pretty good investment of your time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is how Paul's argument was placed in the mouth of Shimon, and it remains inaccurate. Gentlemen, brothers, it is possible, after all, to say to you in open public discourse, enjoying freedom of speech with regard to and concerning the patriarch, David, that both he died and was buried, and his tomb is among us, even until this very day. Now think about it. Why would they make that point? Why would they tell you in the middle of this claim that Jesus was so wonderful that they would tell you that God's beloved son is dead and buried?
They have to kill him off.
Yeah, absolutely. Being therefore a prophet and knowing that Theos, by the way, that means that Yahweh's prophets die. Being therefore a prophet, and knowing that Theos swore an oath that out of his fruit of his loins would sit upon his throne, is not what it says, by the way. He foresaw and spoke about the rising up and standing upright of the Christon. What a pile of lies. So they don't have anything that actually ties something Dodes said to Yosha. So what are they doing? They're taking 2 Samuel 7 and say, ah, yes, he was a prophet, and therefore he knew this was going to happen. That's not how 2 Samuel is written. It isn't. Yahweh was not calling Dodes a prophet. Dodes isn't figuring anything out. There is nothing in 2 Samuel 7 that shows Dodes is a prophet, because Nathan was the prophet speaking, conveying Yahweh's message. And it's not Dodes figuring it out, much less it doesn't point to Yosha. But nonetheless, they have to set it up this way because they got nothing else. Upon his throne, and his throne, by the way. The Passover lamb's going to be sitting on his throne. I bet that'll be great. The shepherd's going to stand aside. And he foresaw and spoke about the rising up and standing up of the Christon. I got a news for you here, folks. Christon is never mentioned in any page by any prophet throughout the entirety of the Hebrew text. Because, namely, he was not left behind and abandoned so as to remain at Hades, nor did he see his flesh decay from decomposition. Wow. Hard to believe that they were this overtly committed to killing and burying David.
It is amazing, isn't it?
It just is. To read this, you say, what in the hell is wrong with these people? And you've got 2.5 billion people that believe them? You're taking the man that God loves the most. he named them my beloved. He said, you know, I don't look at people the way you humans do. And that's the reason I chose him. Anoint him. My spirit I have placed upon him. And it will never leave him. And to take him, the author of the Psalms, the author of the Mashal Proverbs, the king of Israel, Yahweh's shepherd for his people, the anointed Messiah, Yahweh's firstborn, and to go out of your way to say he's dead and buried and decayed, worm rot. There is likely nothing in all the universe that these bozos could have said more irritating to his father, who just happens to be God.
Yeah, well.
This is Paul's plot, one which Luke advanced by ascribing it to Peter, but every aspect of it is a lie, from the details to its sweeping implications. For example, unlike Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, who have always been the forefathers of Israel, Dod was not a patriarch. Dod was the son of God, the king of Israel, and the Messiah, none of which apply to Yahusha, as is claimed by Luke or Paul. Moreover, the location of Dod's tomb, other than it is somewhere among the 12 acres which would have comprised the city of Dod, remains known. Now, I can tell you the benefit of fact checker. I said no one knows where the Dod's tomb is. You know, they say, hey, you know, Dod's tomb, you know, we know where it all is. And I say, no, that's not true. Nobody knows where it is. And so my fact checker, Mike, says, you gotta be a little careful with that. It's somewhere in the 12 acres that comprise the city of Dod, because Yahweh specifically speaks of that there's a tomb, and it's, you know, in the city of David. Okay. That's true. Thank you for the correction. We still don't know where it is. They didn't know where it was then. We don't know where it is now. So they lied in that regard. According to Yahweh, Dod's soul was put into a sleep-like state, awaiting his reawakening prior to his glorious return. His nephesh most assuredly is not dead. Moreover, the prophecy was unequivocally about Dod's soul, not his physical body, as Luke and Paul are insisting. Therefore, his grave, meaningless. Remember, this is Mizmor 16:10, I still recall it. By way of contrast, you will not abandon your association with my nephesh, soul.
My soul.
With regard to Shaul, never allowing your set-apart one to see corruption or degradation. The author of the psalm is Dod. My means me, as in Dod. And nephesh means soul, not body. Therefore, Paul's and Luke's argument was predicated on a false premise and then based on a citation which does not apply, which they then misappropriated and misquoted. And this is just in the hypothesis stage of their delusion. The prophecy in Samuel 2, Samuel 7, to which Luke is alluding, does not predict the arrival of a Messiah who would be known as Christon, Christ. It does not speak of Yosha or of a Jesus. Instead, just like the misappropriated Psalm to Samuel 7, is all about Dod and only about the beloved from beginning to end. Now, we're no longer broadcasting. We are recording, but we've, mm-hmm. we've contributed an hour and a half to this program tonight. This rendition of Samuel, 2 Samuel 7, is so important. And mm-hmm. after 20 years of translating this, I was able to see it with fresh eyes. And I saw it with fresh eyes because of something my fact checker, Mike, wrote. He was advancing the idea that a plain reading of the presentation of Purim suggests that it is celebrated the day after the Shabbat, with a car being translated the day after. Come to find out that while a car can mean last and after, its verbal root doesn't mean that at all. Its verbal root speaks of delaying, hesitating. And it's that word that is in the transition point of 2 Samuel 7 that helps us understand why Yahweh went from speaking to Dode to about Dode. And the reason the text changes from you to him is that Yahweh went from speaking to Dode to about Dode. And then he returns again to speaking to Dode. Why would Yahweh speak of Dode? Because he plays the most important role in all of human history. Roles, plural. And so Yahweh, as he does often, he went from speaking to him to of him, and then to him again. And the transition between these two is brought to us by a car. And its verbal root means without hesitation. I'm going to do this without hesitation or delay. And it changes everything as it relates to that prophecy. And so rather than go over it tonight, I will do it next week. By next week, I'm hoping that with Jackie's dedication and with David and Scott's new site, that this chapter will be posted in the last chapter of volume 4 of Questioning Paul. Incredible. And if it is, those who are interested will be able to follow along with the written word, because as we are progressing through these retranslations and re-editing of these books, I find even doing this show, we're all benefited if I do a little less ad-libbing and stay a little closer to what was inspired at the time of the translation and the writing.
Yeah.
Because there's an example is today. I read to Leah about 10% of what I wrote today. And there's some turns of phrases. There's some, the way that Yahweh's text is explained that are mind-blowing. And you just say, it's an out-of-body experience even to read it. And so we're going to share it from the text, a lot of it. We'll ad-lib a lot of it. Today, you know, this program was about 90% ad-lib. But as we do this, I want people who want to read along, as many of you do, to have that opportunity. You'll have it next week. And we'll return to this section. And I know, Kirk, you wanted to refer back to Chabaouk, where Yahweh specifically spoke about the rock.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they're calling Peter.
It's just another pile on. I mean, if I was a debate judge and I was reading this, I mean, I would have called off the fight a long time ago.
Yeah, true. But it's an interesting pile on. We'll share that. And you had a reason to look at the Apostles' Creed.
Oh, it's funny.
It was. Well, we're going to laugh at
it. I don't mean.
Because it is funny.
No,
I mean, these guys are just idiots.
Like,
and if you're not smart enough to figure out that they're idiots, then, you know, shame on you. God says, as he's dressing down the rabbis, he says, you know, I can fix a lot of things, but I just can't fix stupid.
Yeah. That's always true.
Yeah. The smartest people, ethnicity in the history of humankind, has acted as if they were the dumbest.
Wow.
All right. With that said, I look forward to being with all of you next week. Thank you, JB. Appreciate you you making all of this available and all of these years that we didn't have a site up. You know, we're now proudly and prominently linking to Yahweh Barrett. Thank you, David and Scott. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you, Molly and Mike and JK, for all of the marvelous edits and support and creating this first in the sick of 16 rewritten books in the Yada Yahweh series, which will be probably 25 by the time we're done. And now the presentation of them online. It's a glorious day. And I thank you. May Yah bless. Happy Shabbat.
Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.